Today's guest on Medio Scientific's The Business of LoRaWAN is Dr. Simon Bungeman, Project Manager for LoRaWAN and Smart City Projects at Niederrhein Energie und Wasser AG, a major public utility in Western Germany. Simon didn't start in tech. His PhD is in political science, but he somehow ended up building one of the most advanced LoRaWAN networks in the region. In this episode, he shares how a single small problem inside a utility sparked a full digital transformation, what happened when nobody believed LoRaWAN could work, and how a story involving rain, windows, and even a few beavers changed everything. This episode is sponsored by the Helium Foundation and is dedicated to spreading knowledge about LoRaWAN. If you'd like to learn more about the publicly available global LoRaWAN they run, visit helium.foundation. Now, let's dig into the conversation with Dr. Simon Bungeman. Simon, thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm excited to have you here.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. It's once again due to Robert Boggs that you're coming on. So big shout out to Robert. Let's kick it off a little bit with an intro about how you're not natively a LoRaWAN nerd and how you came into this thing.
Yeah, thanks. That is indeed a funny story. It wasn't planned, but it happened anyway. And often these stories are the best. So by trade, I'm graduated in education and in political science. I wrote my first thesis about the moral code development amongst youths and the second thesis about the use of non-military force in crisis regions. And nothing of this has slightly anything to do with LoRaWAN at all. However, I ended up in that space and I feel quite comfortable there. And whenever I introduce LoRaWAN to others, I always tell them that my background and the story and let them know that whatever your background is, I managed to handle LoRaWAN quite well, then you will do that too.
Yeah. And I think I saw that Indonesian is listed as one of the languages, at least that you've heard before, if not speak fluently.
That's correct. We can switch a little bit to Indonesian as well to broaden the audience, but it would be thin ice on my side as well.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have AI translate it for us.
Definitely.
Okay, so you get this education in economics, education, and political science, and then you find LoRaWAN, and really LPWANs in general. Let's talk about what you're doing now. Give me some of the kind of exciting things that you're doing right now with Niederrhein.
So at first, I started as a consultant with a startup in Düsseldorf. First customers and clients were public utilities and LoRaWAN. That was the first time I really got my hands onto LoRaWAN. And roughly a year and a half later, I switched sites basically and got a position at NEW, that is a public utilities company here in the Lower Niederrhein region. The Lower Niederrhein region here is located in the western part of Germany, up to the borders of Netherlands, home of around a million people, I think, plus or minus. And we are a very traditional public utilities company. We serve around 400,000 households with electricity, 150,000 with gas, another 100,000 with water. And that's basically what we do, semi-public owned. So we are sitting in a very traditional space, are operators of critical infrastructure. So we are really used to a very tight set of rules, regulations, and processes. However, at the same time, we strive to become a digital innovator and want to pick up trends to make life for customers easier and speed up, of course, internal processes. So it's a little bit of wouldn't say conflict of interest, but you can tell that just by nature, by default of this situation, there are some obstacles on the way to digitalization.
Yeah. So you've got this conventional side where it's just a standard public utility, and then you've got what sounds like a dream job for a LoRaWAN person, which is, not only are you building out the network and making sure there's coverage, but you're also saying, hey, let's go find some use cases and actually deploy these things and put them into use. Can you talk me through how that started? Because I can't imagine that when you got there, they were just like, hey, we're crushing with LoRaWAN. All we need you to do is to manage it. Like, what did that look like when you got there?
Well, that's indeed a really interesting start, roughly 4.5 years ago. And yeah, pretty much started with zero as a one-man show, as a given a project. Explore LoRaWAN and use cases for the company across all business verticals and make it fly. So I said, yes, awesome. I know LoRaWAN by now. I know the potential and what it can do, how to run it. And said, that's the perfect space to be. Let's do it. So with a full set of enthusiasm, I started to build up a kind of like a experience center first, just with one office floor, and equip the entire thing with whatever the market had to offer, the outdoor and window sensors, CO2, the heating thermostat, people counter, desk occupancy, and whatever there was, just to say, okay, this is LoRaWAN, this is what it looks like, and this is how it works. But my aim was to really give people the opportunity to interact with sensors, with hardware, and see how the sensor really reacts, what kind of data it delivers, to just show them how easy it can be and what you can do with it. So first step, setting up the experience center, put everything in. Second step, bring the people in to really experience it. And that was the tougher challenge. So knocked at roughly 1,000 doors over the next months to introduce myself as a new employee with a new project, saying, well, this is LoRaWAN. Have you ever heard of it? I want to convince you how really great it is. And the response was what is pretty similar, the same kind of resistance and like, never heard of it, or I've heard about it once roughly 5 years ago, and at that time realized that's not our thing and we never touched it again, so leave us alone. No time, it's not my decision, or well, we already have another system in place, or not too sure about it, don't want to make that decision, don't have the money. So it was different kind of no's in all varieties, so from different people, different departments, different backgrounds. And to be honest, that was frustrating. That wasn't the kind of fun I was looking for. And basically, almost no yeses. Tough start the first 6 months. But I think the breakthrough was a pretty much more or less a coincidence. So I think that was early autumn time, similar like now, to be fair, when I came across a notification in our intranet from facility management. It was raining heavily over the weekend, and somebody must have forgotten to close the window. So facility management said, well, to whoever forgot to close the window, please next time take more care, because there was water coming in, causing some damage, and wasn't great for them. So I said, hold on, that sounds familiar. I think there's a solution to that. So called the head of facility and said, literally, so happy to hear about your problem because I can solve it. And they're like, yeah, okay, yes, it was a problem. Really took a bit time to fix it. But, you know, it's more or less a one-time thing. Doesn't happen too often. So I don't think that we really need permanent solutions. Said, okay, understand. But how much did that cost to fix it? How much time and efforts? Yeah, quite a bit. And how often does it really happen? Yeah, from time to time, not always when it rains, but it's quite common that people leave a window open. So I said, that's fine. Let me take care of that. You don't have to do anything. I'll do everything from A to Z. I take the sensors, I install them, I integrate them, I give a dashboard and set up an automatic alarm so you can just take a breather whenever it starts to rain, because if there's a window open, you'll get a notification. And somebody in the building will have the chance to close the window. Yeah, okay. So that made sense, because there was a real problem with some damage behind it and just some extra efforts. And I said, okay, well, let's have a look at it. So a little bit more back and forth about technology, GDPR, and the IT interfaces. He sent a technical maintenance engineer over into the experience center, first visitor, first real visitor, and his mind was blown. He was like, taking the first sensor in the hand, okay, so that's just the sensor. You just put it there, and that's it. That's how it works. Battery, no cabling, and then there's this, and there's that. And he said, are you kidding me? How can it be that easy and that cheap? Yeah, so in his world, you do a lot of cabling, you have external service providers, external systems, lots of efforts to solve a problem. And then I realized that it is actually true when people say, no, we don't want to have this solution. They always have their current environment in mind. They know how much things cost, how much time it takes to organize, to install. But LoRaWAN is so completely different. And that was the case where I thought, okay, he understands exactly what I'm talking about, because he knows this challenge is that's his daily business. So we played a little bit with the sensor, testing where to put it, how to put it. And even though it really solves a problem in the end, we never used that sensor for this application just because we couldn't figure out to install the sensor in a way that when the window is half open, to let us know window is half open, but not that open so it can rain into the room. And then they said, well, that's actually too bad. That is the last thing that we really need for a sensor like this. Otherwise, it doesn't make enough sense. I said, okay, too bad. But we did a lot of other use cases together with him and his team. Leakage sensors, climate sensors, a whole set of energy management system, and anything else. So even though we never came to using that window sensor, everything else was an immediate hit. And it was really great to see how things develop. Once he understood and saw and really experienced how easy it is, his mind completely changed because that was a completely different world. And he immediately knew, I can install the sensor. I know how to activate it. And this is the result I get for that price. That was a win-win-win situation.
That's pretty awesome. I'm imagining that, you know, we get a lot of engineers listening to this. You'll get a bunch of emails or LinkedIn messages after this saying, well, check out this sensor. This window sensor is exactly what you're looking for. So maybe you'll eventually get to solve that problem.
Hopefully.
Was there anything else that you put in that did work that you were super psyched on?
I think so. That was really the most fun way to implement LoRaWAN, because when you show and demonstrate something and you can see that somebody understands, and then it makes click in the mind and say, yes, I know what you mean. And then the mind starts to think and say, okay, there's something else and something else. That was, of course, you have to have a little bit of luck to find exactly that person who knows and understands and has that curiosity to try new things. Another way that worked quite well for us was LoRaWAN as a business case. And as a public utilities company, one of our core businesses is to really remotely read and control readers for billing purposes. So we already did that before, starting with LoRaWAN, with a system provided by the manufacturer of the meters. And for each meter, you had to have an additional gateway and a router for every 20 devices. So it was a lot of efforts to install the devices. You had to purchase them. You have to operate them. But it worked for getting one set of data once a month. And that is when we challenged the system with LoRaWAN for very obvious reasons, because it gives us much more flexibility and delivered more data. So that was the approach was to define the cost for the current system and see what LoRaWAN can deliver technically and at what cost. So technically, very clear case. There was no need for additional gateways, no need for additional routers, but the meter as such was per piece a little bit more expensive than the previous one. But then the amount of data we received was so much more. Previous system, we received data once a month, sufficient for billing, but with LoRaWAN, four times a day. And that was something where I said, okay, what are we supposed to do with all the data? So business case, very clear, lower invest, more flexibility, because we could run different devices on the same LoRaWAN gateway, in contrast to the system for that one device only. But then data were coming, so much more data. So at first, the billing department said, okay, four times per day, that is so much more than we'll ever need. Just give me one data set once a month and the rest, I don't care. So I said, well, okay, well, let's save the data and see what else we can do with it. So in the end, again, knocking a couple of doors, going around with the data set and say, well, now we have meters and we not only have the volume at the end of the month, we have it every day, we have backward forward temperatures, we have error status. And that's when people said, oh, hold on, you get an error status of a device. That's interesting. Let's have a look at it. So obviously the device is always in the error status with a detailed error message if there's an error. And what was even more interesting for us was the forward and backward temperature. So with that, we can see whether we pump enough heat into the system and whether the pressure and the configuration of the heating system is correct. And that gives us insights that we've never thought about. So when we installed the meters, the purpose was really billing. And now it's billing plus heat control, plus optimization of the internal system. And now the question is not, can we do that with LoRaWAN? The question always is, let's do that with LoRaWAN, or why haven't we done it with LoRaWAN yet? So that is big change driven by money, obviously, but also by operational efficiencies and a whole new opportunity to drive a data-generated business models and operations. That was really convincing and still is.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. I remember talking to Michael Angelov, I want to say in Bulgaria, and he was working with the water meters there. He's actually telling me that the water companies there don't care so much about the loss of water because they bill the customer for it anyway, but they care about the energy to pump the water because they have to pay for that no matter what. So it sounds like you probably have similar problem sets. So this utility thing is super straightforward. And you're doing some other stuff as well. I saw something about managing biodiversity and beavers and water levels and bus spaces. Tell me what else that you're getting your LoRaWAN fingers into.
I think that is really the beauty of LoRaWAN. Yeah, it's so versatile and so unique in its own applications. And we started with the submetering division to read the meters, but since we already built the LoRaWAN network, it is infrastructure that everybody can use for more or less free because it's there. And once you have the infrastructure set, it is so easy to just add another sensor here, a couple of sensors there to create another use case, which otherwise would have been too complicated, too costly. And then people started to come in and say, well, okay, we've heard about your sensors. We've heard about the leakage sensor. Do you have something like this? Do you have something like that? And one of my most favorite stories is really about the beaver, and that's a reminder of that.
Oh, nice!
Of that,
get a little stuff
use case.
Cool.
It's yes, it's the lucky beaver always sitting next to my laptop, and that was a colleague of mine is responsible for overseeing the water quality and water levels in open waters, and just happened that the beaver returned back to its natural habitat. The beaver here is under natural protection, so it's a very special case. You are not allowed to hunt the beaver. You're not allowed to enter the beaver area. And beavers, as you know, they love to build dams. They take wood from anywhere, put it wherever they want to. And it happened that one of the beavers started to build a dam right in front of the canalization, blocking the water from coming into the canalization. So once they realized that this is a severe issue, they had to send out two people three times a day to go to that certain place, stand on a bridge, take binoculars, have a look at the water level, write it down on paper, drive back to the office, put it into the system, and come back 2 days later. So that is really an effort of, it was an effort of 2 to 3 hours per day, so three times per week.
Must have been fun for the employees. Like, hey, go look for these beavers. Yeah, have a good time, guys.
Exactly. It's like, okay, well,
take a lunch break.
We're on the way again. See you later. And don't forget to bring lunch. Exactly. Whatever weather conditions were. Yeah. So there was no choice. They really had to do that. And the solution was really just to use a very simple distance level sensor and just put it on the bridge and then measure the water level. Yeah. That sensor cost at that time €250. Return on an investment was there in less than 2 days. Then again, you have so much more data. Yeah, you have data every hour. You can exactly tell when you have a critical level, when you have to go and make sure that the water is flowing from the beaver dam into the canalization again. And you also know when it was just rain and not the beaver. Yeah, so if you combine it with weather data, you can see, okay, it's been raining and water level rose, then you can clearly tell that probably was not the beaver, it was just rain, so no need to go out. And that's, again, very simple case, and that's something you just cannot come up with. I would never, ever thought about knocking at people's door and ask, well, hey, do you know about the beaver? Is it a problem for you?
Do you have a beaver problem?
Exactly.
Yeah.
At that time, I didn't even know that we had a beaver, to be fair. So that's, another very funny and lucky coincidence, but it's a good story to tell.
It's super cool that you've got this good-sized LoRaWAN network now. This podcast, of course, is sponsored by Helium, which has a global LoRaWAN. It sounds like you guys have plenty of coverage. Do you ever use other or think about using other LoRaWANs to say, hey, let's see if we can fill in some gaps, or are the requirements such that you can't use outside stuff without whatever, a full investigation into it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at first, we thought about using the public LoRaWAN net just to reduce our initial invest. Mm-hmm. But since we use LoRaWAN now for billing purposes, the internal requirements are unfortunately very different. So we had to build our own independent private closed network just to make sure that the data that we receive are handled according to current data regulations. So we can open up the network to partners, but not to the public, so to say. That's again, then we are sitting in a very traditional space, highly regulated.
Sure.
And yeah, that's the boundary.
Interesting. I guess the last question that came up as we were talking is AI is everywhere that I look. Do you think that there'll be a place for these public utilities to say, and I'm sure there's some privacy concerns with this, but say, hey, let's put an AI program into place that reads everybody's emails and inter-company communications and sees where they can use LoRaWAN and then initiates a conversation? Or do you think like, that'll never happen? That's far too invasive.
I would appreciate it. It would be a big help, but I'd say less fun in a way. Yeah.
I
think it really is in the end all about the communication. Yeah. You have to not only actively tell people about the products you do, but you also have to listen to people, to their problems, their operational routines. And sometimes people, after years of doing the same thing every week, every month, they don't often realize a problem as a problem anymore. It's just, that's the way they've done it. There's no alternative. So let's do that again. Let's do the round. Let's read this one. Let's open the door to check. So it really takes a lot of, curiosity, I'd say, and openness to just to figure out and see how people are running their business, what they really have to do, what are nice to have, what are core functionalities. And obviously, you cannot solve every problem with LoRaWAN, but building up the network and having the ability to do whatever we want to gives us the flexibility to just test things, just offer things. Just if it's only just one or two sensors, if that already helps and can make a big difference, that's already a win.
Love it. Yeah, no, it does seem obvious that it's such a useful thing for public utilities. Do you have any idea, or could you share, sorry to put you on the spot here, the amount of savings that has happened since you started implementing LoRaWAN? Is that something that you can present and say, hey, we've saved €10,000 this year?
Yeah, well, that is difficult to assess because we have savings across very different functions. So of course, it's easy to say, well, switching from the previous system to the current system saved us this much in invest, this much of hours saved by not installing additional gateways and routers. But then we haven't factored in the value we are creating with the additional data that we receive. And we don't really factor in the money that we save on not spending on external systems. So it is a very broader variety of different pockets that you are saving money from or taking money out for others. And in the end, you create your qualitative values, quantitative values, and you often comply with new regulations using LoRaWAN. And that is something that is, there's no money behind it. It's something you have to do no matter what. And with LoRaWAN, we are able to comply with regulations in a very convenient and affordable way.
Yeah, it must be such a big win. Well, it sounds like you got a super fun job. I'm sure there's days where you're like, this is a tough one, but it sounds like most time it's pretty good. Simon, thanks so much for making the time to come on. Really appreciate you sharing what you're doing in Western Germany with us.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Really was a pleasure. Good fun.
That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. I built this for you, the one person in about 100,000 who actually has an interest in how this tiny little slice of the world works. Of course, this isn't just about you and me, it's about everyone in LoRaWAN and how we can work together to make an exceptional thing. LoRaWAN is a dispersed community with little pockets of knowledge all around the world, and most of them don't talk to each other as much as I'd like. So the first and best thing we can do to make this show better is to get more guests on who I don't even know exist. I want to talk to strangers. Strangers who are your friends.
please introduce me to the most rad LoRaWainer you know, or point them my way, or hell, reach out and give me a name. When it comes to running down LoRaWAN guests, I can track a falcon on a cloudy day. If you can remember metsci.show, you can find me. That's metsci.show. Metsci.show. Okay, so sharing knowledge by getting great guests on is the first and by far the most important thing we can do to make this better. The next best thing for the show to do is the usual stuff. Subscribe to the show, give it a review, share it in your corner of the world. Again, that's metsci.show. Finally, if you want to support the show financially, you can do that over at support.metsci.show. You'll see options there for one-time donations if you really like this show, as well as an ongoing subscription option if you think this show is worth supporting for the long term. If you want to try LoRaWAN for yourself, sign up for a Medio Scientific account at console.medioscientific.com and get your first 400 data credits for free. That's enough to run a sensor for about a year if you're firing every hour. The show is supported by a grant from the Helium Foundation and produced by Gristle King, Inc. I'm Nick Hawks. I'll see you on the next show.